Hello there. Today is Monday, May 4th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. is fast-tracking a drug that appears to be speeding up recovery for COVID patients.
There are patients out there that can benefit from this medicine today that are hospitalized, and we don't want any time to waste for that.
A U.S. report finds China hid the coronavirus severity to hoard supplies. Also ahead, a world-renowned rock band's iconic song has been reworked for those on the front lines of the pandemic. It's all on today's International Edition. As of Sunday, there were more than 1,092,000 people infected and at least 67,000 deaths in the United States from the novel coronavirus. As the number of cases rise, states are individually operating at their own pace in confronting the pandemic. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis's phase one of reopening starts Monday.
We're going to begin doing our state parks so people can go. Now, there's obviously going to continue to be social distancing.
Restaurants and stores can also reopen Monday in Florida at 25% capacity. The stay-at-home order remains in Michigan, but Governor Gretchen Whitmer says some work can resume.
That includes construction work, real estate activities, and work that is primarily and traditionally performed outdoors.
And in Massachusetts, Governor Charlie Baker is ordering everyone there to wear face protection in public.
There's two reasons for that. One is obviously to protect you from others, but just as important is to protect others from you.
Baker plans to reopen Massachusetts May 18th. I'm Ed Donahue.
Well, as governors in about half of the United States partially reopen their economies, the governor of New York, the epicenter of the U.S. outbreak, is pushing back on pressures to reopen. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports Governor Andrew Cuomo says it still isn't safe.
I'm not going to put dollar signs over human lives.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo at a briefing in Queens on pressure to reopen the state.
I feel it. I get it. I disagree with people who say open the economy even though you know there's a public health risk. I disagree with that.
While he says hospitalizations are down along with intubations, new cases were a little over 800 Saturday, and 299 people died. I'm Shelley Adler.
Following the results of a U.S. study released last week finding the antiviral drug remdesivir's promise in shortening recovery time for COVID-19 patients, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is speeding up the drug's approval. It would normally go through a much more rigorous process. Daniel O'Day, CEO of Gilead Science, the manufacturer of the drug, says the company will be working to boost production and giving some of it away for free.
We want to make sure nothing gets in the way of these patients getting the medicine, so we made a decision to donate about 1.5 million vials of remdesivir. We'll be working with the government to determine how best to distribute that.
Meanwhile, U.S. officials are accusing China of covering up the initial extent of the outbreak and how contagious the disease is in order to stock up on medical supplies needed to respond to it. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports the U.S. Secretary of State also has some additional accusations.
During an appearance on ABC's This Week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he suspects the coronavirus pandemic began in a Chinese lab.
These are not the first times that we've had a world exposed to viruses as a result of failures in a Chinese lab.
Pompeo says U.S. intelligence agencies continue to look into the start of that pandemic.
Verify so that we are certain.
He also accuses the Chinese Communist Party and government of trying to prevent the rest of the world from finding out about the outbreak until it began to spread internationally, costing hundreds of thousands of lives. I'm Tim McGuire.
The UN Refugee Agency is warning of potentially devastating consequences for millions in South Sudan if the COVID-19 pandemic takes root and spreads uncontrollably throughout the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, was mired in war for decades before it gained independence in 2011, and for most of the time since. Years of conflict, floods, a recent swarm of locusts, and other natural disasters have left millions of people unable to meet their most basic needs. The UN Refugee Agency warns this weakened population might be unable to ward off the coronavirus pandemic. To date, says UNHCR spokesman Baba Baloch, only 35 cases of the disease have been confirmed in South Sudan. But if the virus spreads rapidly, he tells VOA, this situation could quickly turn into a humanitarian crisis.
The threat of COVID, the pandemic, this could have deadly consequences for people where health structures are very weak, where 1.7 million people are displaced, where communal fighting is a real threat today.
Baloch says the international community must step forward urgently and do something to prevent this from happening. He says the country's health facilities have been largely damaged or destroyed during years of warfare. He says internally displaced people are living in crowded sites with poor sanitary conditions. He says many people lack access to clean water and hygiene facilities. He says preparations to tackle the pandemic should be taken now while the numbers of infections are still low.
This is the time that we want to use to put in place infrastructure or support authorities and people on the ground that they are well prepared in case the numbers are going to go up. But let's not forget that the way this pandemic has been spreading, if you're not prepared, we could see many lives in danger in South Sudan.
The South Sudanese government has a high-level task force leading the battle against the coronavirus. The task force said Wednesday that 28 people newly infected with the virus have been quarantined. It is urging South Sudanese to follow precautions meant to limit the virus's spread. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency, working with South Sudanese authorities, has constructed 5 emergency treatment centers. 5 more are set to be built in the coming weeks. The agency says this and other assistance programs it is operating on behalf of refugees and internally displaced people are costly. The UNHCR is appealing to international donors to be more generous than they have been so far, noting it has received only 11% of the $179 million it needs to meet the humanitarian needs of people inside South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic is touching the lives of almost everyone in the world and has brought to light the many brave people on the front lines providing medical care, security, and food. But on Sunday's World Press Freedom Day, journalists in many ways are also being recognized as frontline soldiers battling to provide the truth and factual information for citizens looking to make the right decisions for their families. I recently spoke to Dr. Courtney Radge, advocacy director with the Committee to Protect Journalists. Here is part two of our two-part interview.
I think journalists are one of the underappreciated frontline workers during the coronavirus. Of course, we are so grateful for the work that nurses and grocers and first responders are doing, but we really have to understand that many journalists themselves are first responders, especially photojournalists, video journalists, and those print reporters who are going out to the front lines, whether we're talking about the hospitals. And so, you know, we're really concerned at the Committee to Protect Journalists, both about how to help journalists stay safe because they are oftentimes putting their health at risk to go report the story. Obviously, not every story can be told remotely from a computer or a phone. And we're really concerned about the blowback against journalists in many parts of the world and the press freedom implications of this global pandemic.
They've been threatened. They've been banned. They've been in some places around the world imprisoned just for trying to get the truth out about the virus.
This is an unprecedented pandemic. But unfortunately, some of the responses that we're seeing are not out of line with what we saw in the aftermath of September 11th and the war on terror, where you had this widespread acknowledgement that terrorism is a problem, but it gets warped and misconstrued by governments around the world who then use that as a cover to clamp down on press freedom and on independent reporting. So that's what we're seeing with the coronavirus. We're seeing in countries like Iraq, Egypt, Iran, Iran, South Africa, really around the world. Journalists who are reporting on coronavirus, especially if it has to do with official statistics versus what other reporting is showing about how many cases or how many deaths there have been. These journalists are then getting caught up and either, as you said, arrested, detained, in the case of Egypt, kicked out of the country. In the case of Iraq, Reuters had its license suspended temporarily. So there's this real battle over the truth. And I think one of the challenges is that there isn't necessarily a truth. There is an evolving set of facts, which may look different over time as new information comes to light, as new discoveries about the virus are made. So on the one hand, there isn't necessarily one global truth, although there are certainly officials who have valid information. And then you couple that with the interest of many countries in controlling the information environment, in making sure that there is no information out there that doesn't comport with the official version of reality, which in many cases does not comport to reality. And journalists are getting caught in the crosshairs because theirs is a public interest job.
Where does the U.S. stand in all this with President Donald Trump? He's attacked the media. He's called many organizations that are reputable fake news. He has not always provided journalists with factual information. How concerned are you about what is happening right here in the United States?
We are concerned about what's happening in the United States. And actually, we just released a report about the Trump administration and the press, which was in the works long before this and builds on a report that we did about the Obama administration and the press, really looking at what the impact has been. And I think that we are really concerned about the constant challenges that the press face in covering the Trump administration, the attacks verbal, online, that they get from the president himself, which then can spur additional attacks and harassment. We're concerned about the discrediting and undermining of journalism as a profession, as a fundamental pillar of democracy. And of course, about general threats, but aimed at, you know, loosening up libel laws or the idea that only, again, certain types of information should be made available to only reporters that are sympathetic or on the side of the president. This sort of vilification of the media, the ongoing politicization of journalists who cover the White House, is really detrimental to press freedom in the United States and sends a very negative signal to countries around the world, which had already picked up this fake news trope as an excuse to clamp down on reporting and independent journalism. We've seen fake news laws proliferate around the world, and now the coronavirus is providing yet another rationale for adopting false news laws, fake news laws, disinformation laws. Too often they are being used to restrict independent reporting, punish critical journalists, and Trump is leading the way.
I understand the Committee to Protect Journalists has a campaign right now that does just that, working to protect journalists. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so some of the most vulnerable journalists right now are those journalists who are behind bars. And according to our last prison census, there were at least 250 journalists imprisoned in nearly two dozen countries. And right now, if you're a journalist in prison, that could amount to a death sentence, because obviously in prison, you're not able to socially distance. You don't have access to good hygiene. And in many countries, you rely on friends and family to bring you basic necessities. So we launched a campaign along with more than 100 partners to call for world leaders to immediately and unconditionally release all journalists who are imprisoned for their work. We have a petition now on change.org/freethepress, where we're calling on world leaders to release these journalists because journalism shouldn't become a death sentence.
Dr. Courtney Raj, Advocacy Director with the Committee to Protect Journalists, their campaign and petition, #FreeThePress, calls on world leaders to immediately and unconditionally release all journalists imprisoned for their work. Cameroonian journalists marked World Press Freedom Day Sunday with protests against abuse from the government as well as from rebels fighting for an independent English-speaking state. Reporters Without Borders in its 2020 World Press Freedom Index ranked Cameroon 134th out of 180 countries in its World Press Freedom Index. Some Cameroonian journalists have been detained for their reporting or are on the run from the military or separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Journalism is not a crime.
Free the press.
This message from the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists that journalism has rules, regulations, and professional ethics is broadcast on television and radio and shared on social media platforms by journalists in Cameroon as a sign of protest against the abuses they face. The message insists that journalists be allowed freedom to practice.
We say no to the constant harassment and haphazard arrests of journalists in their line of duties.
Journalists did not organize popular celebrations and public protests as in the previous years because of the more than 2,000 cases of COVID-19 in Cameroon. They said, however, they shared the pain of peers who have been in detention, such as Mancho Bibixi and T. Conrad, arrested and charged with insurrection against the state of Cameroon, and who have been in detention since 2017. Samuel Wazizi, arrested late last year and jailed for alleged collaboration with separatist fighters, and Wawa Jackson, who was arrested in 2019 and accused of propagating the secessionist agenda in the English-speaking regions where separatists are fighting to break away from the majority French-speaking country. Nga Christian Bibgo, publisher of Cameroon's lone English-language daily newspaper, The Garden Post, says his news organ has been the victim of press abuses while covering the separatist crisis that has killed 3,000 people in Cameroon in the past 3 years. He says 15 of his reporters, newspaper vendors, and their family members have fled from hostile areas in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions.
The separatists think that we have not been doing much to project their independence ideology, and that is why our reporters in the field are targeted. I have not gone out of Yaoundé since 2017 that the crisis metamorphosed into an armed conflict, because they have openly called to tell me I'm a target. We received calls from top government officials who said we were a newspaper that is working for the separatists.
Cameroon's government did not issue a statement on for World Press Freedom Day, as there were no public ceremonies due to COVID-19. However, the government has always maintained that there is press freedom in Cameroon, and journalists are only arrested when they act unprofessionally. Jude Viban, president of the Cameroon Association of English-Speaking Journalists, says the government should decriminalize media offenses and make sure abuses against the rights of journalists by government officials and separatist fighters are stopped.
What we are doing is to inform, and we do so for the interest of the population. So a handful of people should not attack the press. When stories are not told because journalists are under attack, the population will not be informed, which of course is their right to be informed in a democracy like ours.
Reporters Without Borders says press freedom continues its long decline in Cameroon, and reporters continue to be subjected to threats, attacks, intimidation, and arrests after President Paul Biya's re-election for a seventh term in October 2018. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Some of the other stories we are following at VOA News. Pope Francis called on Sunday for international scientific cooperation to discover a vaccine for the coronavirus and said any successful vaccine should be made available around the world. Francis, who has been delivering his Sunday address from the Papal Library instead of St. Peter's Square because of the lockdown in Italy, thanked all those around the world who were providing essential services. Iran plans to reopen mosques and schools in areas that have been consistently free of the coronavirus as President Hassan Rouhani's government starts to ease restrictions that were aimed at containing the outbreak. Mosques have been closed and religious gatherings banned since mid-March as the outbreak spread. in Iran, the Middle East's hardest hit country. Since then, Iranians have turned to drive-ins for ceremonies during the holy Muslim fasting month of Ramadan. Israel's Supreme Court began a two-day hearing on Sunday to determine whether Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has been indicted for corruption, will be allowed to form a new government. A ruling against Netanyahu would likely trigger a snap election, the fourth since April 2019, as the country grapples with the coronavirus and its economic fallout. Stay with VOA for all the latest U.S. and up-to-date world news. After a wave of news reports that he was gravely sick or even dead, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has apparently reappeared in public for the first time in 21 days at a fertilizer factory. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
State media photos showed Kim smiling as he cut a red ribbon during a ceremony at a phosphate fertilizer plant in Suncheon, a city north of the capital, on Friday. The pictures did not immediately suggest Kim had any health problems. Rumors about Kim's health began to swirl after he skipped a major political anniversary on April 15th. The reason for Kim's absence is unclear. State media did not address the rumors about his health. U.S. President Donald Trump refused to comment.
I'd rather not comment on it yet. Kim Jong-un will have something to say about it at the appropriate time.
It's not the first time Kim has reappeared following rumors about his health. In 2014, Kim disappeared from public view for about 40 days, prompting a flurry of speculation. He eventually reemerged using a cane. But this time around, the rumors were especially intense, as well as varied. Among the theories, Kim had undergone failed heart surgery, suffered a kidney malfunction, was in lockdown because of coronavirus fears, or had been injured in a botched missile test. TMZ, the celebrity gossip website, reported Kim had died. On social media, the portly North Korean leader's death had become an internet joke, with the hashtag Kim Jong-un dead trending on Twitter, Instagram, and other sites. Mintaro Oba is a former U.S. diplomat focused on the Koreas.
Speculation about North Korea and the North Korean leader in particular can get really overheated, and that we need to approach these things with caution. North Korean instability and power transition is a real possibility, and we need to be prepared.
South Korean officials had rejected the reports, insisting Kim was alive and in control of the country. Some officials in Seoul had said Kim may have skipped the April 15th anniversary event because of coronavirus concerns. North Korea has said it does not have any coronavirus infections, a claim experts say is very unlikely. In the state media photos published Saturday, neither Kim nor any of the top officials surrounding him wore face masks. The 36-year-old Kim, a cigarette smoker with a history of health problems, has gained a significant amount of weight since taking power after the death of his father, Kim Jong-il, in 2011. Kim's health is especially relevant because he has no clear successor, raising concerns about a power struggle. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
VOA's International Edition continues. With the coronavirus having closed nightclubs across the world, comedians are still managing to get the laughs from people on a pandemic lockdown all over the world. VOA's Mariana Diallo reports on Hollywood's Laugh Factory and The Stand Comedy Club in Edinburgh. And she looks at a Japanese comedian who's also storming the comedy world.
Laugh Factory owner Jamie Masada started streaming live comedy shows shortly after California ordered all non-essential businesses closed.
We should not forget, laughter is healing. Laughter brings people together.
When they add illegal immigrants, like, follow the rules, why don't you listen to the rules?
Comedian Tehran Von Garcia has been hosting live sets alongside actor Craig Robinson. He says the stream is being played in hospitals for patients infected with the coronavirus.
When I read a DM I recently got from someone in London who specifically said the last memory that they will have of their father is them watching the Laugh Factory live and laughing at Craig and myself discussing British accents. That's going to be something that sticks with me for the rest of my life.
Elsewhere, when the UK government ordered a three-week public lockdown, the Stand Comedy Club decided to host a live-streamed show with an option for the audience to donate to the club and to the comedians. The experiment has proved a success with an audience of 100,000 tuning in to watch the first two shows. That's compared to their usual venue, which seats 160.
People were watching from all over the world, some people in quarantine, in isolation, people from every continent basically got in touch.
Many comedians have delved into the issue of self-isolation. Comic JoJo Sutherland.
Present I bought the kids for Christmas that I completely forgotten to give them, and that's a shame because they'd have loved a puppy.
Ross McClellan says doing stand-up without an audience seems odd, but there might be an advantage to it.
I feel like sometimes, right, when I walk out and people hear me speak and the way I look, they get a bit worried, you know, that, and I get it, I understand, it's the eyes, isn't it? I've got these big eyes in my head, you know.
And finally, the Japanese comedian who stormed the world with his nonsense pineapple pen hit is repurposing the catchy song into a new message. Wash your hands. Three days after the song was released, it has racked up over 3 million views on YouTube, and the comedian's Twitter page has been flooded with videos of Japanese children laughing and joining in on his hand-washing dance. Mariama Diallo, VOA News. I've paid my dues.
Queen and singer Adam Lambert have a message for workers on the front line of the COVID-19 fight. You are the champions. The band recently gathered virtually to record a new version of the Queen classic, We Are the Champions. It was released Friday on all streaming and download services, with proceeds going to the World Health Organization's COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund. Guitarist Brian May said they really just wanted to find a way to give back.
I thought this is a great way to use the legacy that we have to do some good in the world. You know, we don't really need to make money anymore. We don't need to be any more famous. We need to use what we have in the best possible way. And who would have thought we'd be facing this kind of challenge?
For May, the release comes at a time of great sadness. Last week, the virus took the life of a friend who he described was like a brother to him. You've been listening to International Edition. That's going to do it for our show today, but you can always find us at VOAnews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Wunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Please take care and be well.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Oh.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000.